Noor.
The problem is that to go almost anywhere, Noor has to pass the clinic. This used to be a good thing. It was why she bought her house. She'd get up at 9, wash, dress, put on a coat, pick up an apple, get into the car, eat the apple at the traffic lights at the foot of her road, 6, maybe 7 bites, throw the core into the garden of the man who once called her a terrorist. By 9:30, she'd be at her desk. In the days after everything happened, Noor sometimes found herself halfway to the door with an apple in her hand before remembering that there was no journey to make. Because there was no desk to sit at. Because she no longer had a job. That's happening less frequently now, though. Only once in the last fortnight. She's getting used to the new routine. Of no routine. Admittedly, Noor could be making more of this time. These could be her last days as a free woman, for God's sake. She probably ought to be skydiving or swimming with dolphins or having orgies. Though to do any of these, she'd still have to drive past the clinic. She's in the car now, stuck in the traffic climbing the road that leads past Nepenthe and out of town. It's quieter now in Crows Hill. The police were the first to go. The yellow tape and traffic cones were carried off to another, fresher incident. Then the reporters left, reluctantly, not wanting to leave without answers, called away only by other stories with higher chances of answers. Then the clinic closed, and the protesters left too. Without the usual crowds, the street seems wider, unnaturally bare. Leaves blow across the pavements and pile up along the high walls of the clinic grounds, in sight now, the tall trees behind them, the sky grey behind the trees. The traffic jolts forward, then compresses to a standstill. Noor drums her fingers arrhythmically on the wheel. This is like a punishment from Greek mythology. She can't just drive by. No, Noor's going to have to crawl past the clinic at 2 miles per goddamn hour. Unable to look away, even though there's nothing to see except a wall and some trees and a pair of shut gates. But that's just it, isn't it? It's the shutness of the gates that's the point. After William died, there were bouquets left outside the clinic, leaning up against the knobbled flint of the wall. Carnations in pink cellophane, lilies in green cellophane, sunflowers in purple cellophane. Noor thought it was strange at first. It wasn't like anything had happened right outside the clinic gates. It was further down the road, in the town. Now she wonders if the people who brought those flowers weren't confused, had known what they were doing, going not to the site of the death, but the origin point, where the death began. She wonders where they would have laid the flowers had they been allowed inside the gates. Reception? The treatment rooms? Or further in? Down the hall, up the stairs, into Noor's office, on the desk. Noor called Louise not long after the two of them were suspended. She hadn't planned to speak to Louise, and in fact the board had warned her not to speak to Louise in one of the many interviews she was attending around that time to establish how involved Noor was in whatever it was Louise was doing. But one morning, Noor turned on the television and saw a picture of the clinic. The text, scrolling along the bottom of the screen, said, "Fraud probe. Nepenthe clinic closed. Employees under investigation. Fraud probe." Noor watched several revolutions of the same words before she understood them. Then she called Louise. When Louise answered, it was as if the smiling Louise who had just appeared on the screen was speaking directly into Noor's brain. Her voice didn't sound as if she was smiling, though. Noor, she said. What do you want? Noor switched off the television. It's public, she said. It's on TV.
You called to tell me that.
The clinic's closed, Noor said. I didn't expect that.
They had to suspend restorations until they could establish how many procedures have been compromised, Louise said. What did you think would happen?
Right, said Noor. So now I'm naive for thinking the clinic would hush something up.
They would have hushed it up if it suited them, Louise said.
But having this taking center stage in the press may suit the board better. They can fire or prosecute a couple of rogue employees, say that lessons have been learned and safeguards have been put in place, and the whole thing draws attention away from anything else they've been up to. So, get ready for your 15 minutes of fame.
What else have they been up to? Noor said.
Raza, right? What is Raza? I know that you know.
I do, Louise said, but you know I'm not allowed to talk about it. Is that why you're calling me?
I want to know other things too, Noor said.
Why did William Hall die?
What did you have to do with that?
Noor had seen William's death reported in the news as a tragic accident. There was speculation that it was a suicide. Either way, he clearly shouldn't have been allowed out to wander around the town right after getting a traumatic memory back, and a negligence claim had been brought against Nepenthe by his widow, Annetta. Noor hadn't had much opportunity to follow how that had been going, having been kept busy with her own investigation. She did know that, so far, the two things, William Hall's death and Louise's malpractice, were being treated as separate cases. Nepenthe was undoubtedly aware that William was a former client of Louise's, but it didn't seem to know any more than that. There was a silence on the line. Noor carried on, talking into it.
And what about Oscar Levy? What did Nepenthe do to him?
More silence. Then Louise said, Listen, Noor, I know you want answers. You think having them will help you sleep at night. And even if that were true, which it isn't, by the way, why would I give you what you want?
So you won't tell me why you talked those people out of getting restorations? Or what Eleanor had to do with it?
Louise laughed.
That still gets me, she said. You didn't know anything. You get me sacked, and then you try to find out if you did the right thing. There were things in her tone that couldn't coexist. Spite and pity, anger and resignation, affection and dislike. Noor wondered which of them were real and which she was imagining.
What I want to know, said Louise, and her voice changed again, becoming neutral, is what exactly did I do to you?
To me, said Noor.
Because all I know is that Nepenthe wasn't going to hire you. You had no experience, but I argued for you. I nurtured you. I didn't air my suspicions about your unethical relationships with female patients or your inappropriate interest in me. I hoped you'd take personal rejection professionally. Even when it became apparent you had a grudge against me, I still helped you access client files because I trusted you. But you wanted to frame me. Do I have that right? Partway through this, Noor realized Louise was recording their conversation, that this statement was a warning. She didn't know if it was a warning of what Louise might do or what she'd already done.
I'd better go, Noor said.
Just a moment, Louise said.
I've decided I will give you an answer to your questions, the ones you really want to know. The first answer is yes. You fucked things up with Eleanor because you were terrified of intimacy. And the second answer is also yes. This is your fault. I spent my career helping people, saving people. I know that everything I did was for the good. William Hall is dead because of you. Other people's lives will be ruined because of you. Noor flinched. She took the handset away from her ear quickly, but it was too late. The words had already got inside. She could hear Louise still, more distantly now. "There are your answers," said Louise. "And fuck you." After this phone call, Noor didn't sit down heavily or throw her phone across the room. She didn't stare out of any windows. She went upstairs and pushed herself, flat on the floor, underneath the bed in her spare bedroom / study, used as neither, sweeping with her arms until she hit a laptop bag. She backed out with it, snake-like, and set the laptop up on the empty desk. She'd borrowed the laptop several months ago to get some reports filed over a weekend. She hadn't bothered to tell anyone she'd taken it. Nobody would have cared. Nobody knew it was here. Noor herself had forgotten it was here. The lighting up of the screen, the Nepenthe logo, its bland lowercase optimism, gave her pause. A memory of when the logo felt different, when Noor felt different. If she did this now, she couldn't ever go back to that logo's former, comforting constellation of associations, to her tidy office with its single plant, the tea and sugar in the drawer, light striping the pale walls. She glanced out of the window at the silent garden of the house next door. Least harm, she thought. She broke into the Nepenthe legal department's database of contact details. It didn't take long to find what she was looking for. Only a few minutes to carry out an act that would get spotted as a breach immediately, traced back to this laptop, and from there, eventually, traced to Noor. When she shut the laptop, she realized she'd been holding her breath. Her head was ringing with the pressure. But what will they do? She asked herself, taking large, tattered breaths. Sack her? She's as good as sacked anyway. Add a few more years onto the prison sentence? The logo is just a logo. Her office is a distant dream. It's all over anyway. The rest doesn't matter. Noor is at the gates of Nepenthe now. The gates are tall and made of dark, solid wood. They fit so tightly against the stone gatepost that it's impossible to see the building behind them. The curved white front, the glass doors, closed. Eerie, she thinks. But is it really? It wouldn't look eerie to anybody else. It's a normal gate on a quiet road in a small town. Which is eerie to Noor. All the things that made it normal to her are gone. No guards, no protesters, and inside, no technicians, no clients, no Carini or Jim or Marie on reception, nobody sitting at the screens in the treatment rooms, nobody in the kitchen wasting time talking about their holidays. The lights off, the white dimmed, the shutters all drawn, like somewhere closed for the night, except it never closed at night, did it? Noor left in early November. A month later, in December, the clinic closed. Now it's nearly March. The daffodils on the grass banks of her road have come out en masse. Noor saw a butterfly yesterday, a small white one. The people that Noor overhears in the park and the shops hardly talk about Nepenthe anymore. They used to say things like, "All the children in school have colds right now." Probably something to do with that clinic. But the passers-by these days are talking about how much better the traffic is on Belsey Road by the old Nepenthe clinic. already the old Nepenthe Clinic. Or what the theme for the school fete will be. Or where does good gluten-free cheesecake? And has anyone seen that the old Odeon Cinema on Watlington Street has reopened as a picture house, which means you can have a glass of wine while you watch a film? Maybe soon they'll be talking about how the old Nepenthe Clinic has reopened as a community theatre, or a rehab facility, or a hotel. And there are daffodils everywhere, and a white butterfly. The pace of the traffic picks up, carrying Noor away up the road. Nepenthe's gates shrink in her rearview mirror. Stop, she wants to say. I'm not done. But done with what? What she means is, I still don't know. Doesn't know what Louise did. Doesn't know if the clinic should have closed. Doesn't know why William died. Doesn't know if she was wrong or right. Doesn't know if Eleanor still loves her, if she ever did, ever would again, or if Noor should have deleted that last memory when she had the chance and tried to move on. Endless questions, says Oscar. Still looking for answers, says Louise mockingly. Noor finishes the line for her. Fuck you. Noor reaches the bottom of the hill. She takes the turning out of town towards the coast. David had advised against this. He'd told her not to involve herself any further. That was a couple of weeks ago. Noor had run into him throwing some bottles into the recycling bin on Saturday morning, and he'd said he was going to walk along the river. Did Noor want to come? She surprised him by saying yes. The two of them sat on a bench overlooking the water. The sun was out, bouncing off the ducks' backs, just like water was supposed to. Maybe everything bounced off a duck's back. The morning green of the grass was freshly rinsed and sparkling, undented, crossed only by spiders and snails. The tree above them was covered in tiny, hairy buds. So what's going on with Nepenthe? David asked. Noor sighed. They've been tracking down the clients that Louise got in contact with, she said. None of them are saying anything. Several of them are so scared we might make them say something that they've got themselves legal representation. David started to speak, then waited as a jogger went past. Her breath sandpapered the air in short, hard strokes. They watched her shiny back disappear around the next corner. David said, "So you're not off the hook yet?" "They know I didn't carry out some of the checks I should have," Noor said. "When I was authenticating Louise's access, I mean. I told them that. I just don't know if there's a way to prove that Louise made the calls and not me. I don't know if she's even blaming me or not. I guess if some of these people do talk, or decide to get their memories back, that will be evidence. But they're not doing any new restorations, as far as I know." "I can't believe Louise did all that," David said. "You used to know her," Noor said. "What did you make of her then?" David lifted his hands. "I lived with her for a couple of years, a long time ago," he said. "I barely remember it. Maybe because I had other things on my mind at the time. I wasn't paying attention." Another pause. Another passerby. This time a middle-aged woman with a French bulldog that leaned yearningly towards their feet before the woman noticed and pulled it onwards. "You probably knew her better than I ever did," David said. "I mean, I don't even know how her life turned out. Before this, I mean. Was she with someone? Did she have children?" "She's divorced," Noor said. "She has a daughter, about 20, May." "Really?" David said. Jesus. In my mind, Louise is 20. He looked sad. Are you okay? Noor asked. Yes, David said. It's strange how things turn out. I was just thinking about Louise. We slept together once, in a field. It was beautiful, actually. Not just the sex. The field and sunset. She'd brought a joint. Now I think about it, she could have set the field on fire. And I had hay fever. It's probably more beautiful in my memory. She'd been celebrating some milestone with her research team. I met her for a drink. I had no idea at the time that it was probably the day they worked out how to delete memories. Noor tried, and failed, to imagine Louise, 20-something years old, lying in a cornfield with David, smoking weed. Why didn't you get together? She asked. Because you liked someone else? Yes. I assumed it was a one-off for both of us, but then she basically ended our friendship, ignored me when we crossed paths, so now I don't think that was true, maybe. Anyway, we were talking about your life, not my youth 1,000 years ago. I'm sure you will be exonerated, Noor, eventually. It's not just that bothers me, Noor said. It's the clients. Not just the people who were Louise's clients, who have to deal with whatever it is she's done, but all the people who think that the restoration ruined their life. All the people who think having a memory deleted ruined their life. She thought about her former neighbours. She hadn't seen them again after that day. There was a to let sign outside their flat. She looked at it every time she came home, but the driveway was always empty and the blinds in their flat, some up, some down, never moved. We're ruining a lot of lives, she said. Not you personally, said David. Noor looked at the ducks. She said nothing. I actually know someone who decided against getting a restoration, David said suddenly. Oh? Noor said. Really? Has their life been ruined? They seem okay, David said. But you never really know, do you? If it's really okay, and if so, how long for? But they seem happy to me. I take it you never had a deletion? Noor asked. No, David said. I thought about it once, years ago. In the end, I felt like, even though it was a painful memory, I wanted to hold on to it anyway. Because you never know when it might come in useful? Said Noor. Because then you might just be able to let it go, naturally, said David. And then it's really gone. The traffic vanishes once Noor gets out of town. She drives southwards for an hour before arriving at Annetta's door. She stands on the doorstep and rings the bell. Then, as she always does, she starts to feel that she's standing slightly too close to the door and moves back off the step, so as not to end up nose to nose with the door opener. The first time she came here, she stood way back, almost at the bottom of the path. That was because she wasn't sure if she should have come at all. She hadn't planned to, but then she saw a picture of Annetta in a newspaper, her hair blowing across her face in the wind, struggling with the bags she was carrying. She looked desperate. No, she was quoted as saying. They haven't told me anything. I just want answers. And so Noor decided that she would go to Annetta's house, whether or not it constituted professional misconduct, in for a penny, in for a pound, and speak to her. She had to examine her own motives for this first. She didn't want to bother a grieving woman in pursuit of her own agenda, trying to find out exactly what Louise had to do with his death. And if it might, in some way, get Noor off the hook. But no, she didn't believe it was that. Maybe it was, but only a little bit. More than that, it was the desperate look of William's wife. Mostly, it's because Noor knew it was what William would want. William, a total stranger. And yet, Noor feels a connection to him, an intimacy. She doesn't know why. Maybe because she saw him die. She didn't tell David she was going to Annetta's house that first time. She didn't tell anyone. When a shape appeared in the rippled glass of the front door, it occurred to Noor that she could pretend to be someone else, a Jehovah's Witness or a charity collector, and nobody would ever know that she'd been there. "Hi, could you spare a minute for Save the Children?" The door was answered by a short woman in her 60s. She was already frowning. Noor wondered if this was Annetta's mother. "I'm Noor Ali," she said, before she could change her mind. The woman scowled at her. She said, "No journalists." She started to close the door. "Wait," Noor said. "I'nm a doctor at Nepenthe." "Bullshit," said the woman. The door slammed. Then it opened again. Like a magic trick, the older woman was gone, and a younger, exhausted-looking woman, whom Noor recognized as Annetta Hall, was standing in her place. "Is that a lie?" Annetta said. "Are you really a doctor at the clinic?" "I am," Noor said. "And I'm sorry to turn up like this, but I thought you might want to know more about William. I read that you hadn't been given any information, and I don't know how much more I can offer you, but I came anyway." "Are you allowed to speak to me?" Annetta asked. "No," Noor said. "Not really." "How did you know where I lived?" "I broke into the legal department's files." "Okay." Noor said. "I also need to tell you that you might have cause to... I mean, I have a role..." Annetta stepped back. "Come in," she said. "Come in," says Annetta. Noor follows her into the house. She takes off her shoes and puts them next to the various small and adult-sized pairs of shoes scattered around the porch. She hangs her coat up between a red jacket with ladybirds on it and a large navy windbreaker. William's things haven't been put away yet. His electric razor and aftershave are on the bathroom shelf, next to the cartoon character Bubble Bath and the head lice lotion. His Wellingtons are in the utility room. His credit cards are in a kitchen drawer, with the spare keys and batteries and rubber bands. "I really appreciate this," Annetta says. "Please don't thank me," Noor says. "Milo!" Annetta shouts, leaning into the kitchen. "Fiona! Noor's here!" She turns back. They're outside. They're making a coffin for a dead bird they found. Marion, our counsellor, said stuff like that was normal, given the situation. If they ask again to cremate it, though, that's still a no. "Fair enough," says Noor. "No cremations." "How are they?" "Fiona's still angry. Milo, I don't know." "And how are you?" Annetta sighs. "I don't know." When Noor first came here, she told Annetta that Louise had been trying to get in touch with William to stop him getting his restoration. That Louise had already done the same thing successfully with several other people before Noor reported her. Nepenthe was in the process of tracking down and interviewing the clients in question, but whatever Louise had said to them had obviously left an impression because they'd all refused to cooperate. They didn't want their memories back, and they didn't want to talk. And because they didn't want to sue either, Nepenthe might well leave it at that. Which meant that the only person who knew what William's deleted memory actually was Louise. "Right," said Annetta. She frowned. Then she cried. Nora had to acknowledge then that she'd had, in a very small and secret way, an idea that she might say to Annetta, "This was all my fault." And Annetta would say, "No, it was not your fault. It was going to happen anyway." Or, "I forgive you." But at that moment, Noor saw how stupid and wrong that idea was. Instead, she said, "Tell me how I can help." "How's your mother?" Noor asks Annetta. "I think she's okay. Just a slippery step. It's her hip, apparently. She's also got herself into a state because she thinks she ought to be with me night and day. She's driving the hospital staff mad. I don't suppose they'll be persuaded to keep her for longer. After I see her, I'll go to the solicitor's office. I hope it's not too long. The kids will be pleased to have you here. I know that." "Take all the time you need," Noor says. "Any news on the ongoing?" "The lawsuit? Well, the solicitors are really good. I suppose everything's going smoothly. There could be a lot of compensation for the children, though they'll already have the life insurance." Her eyes fill with tears. Noor puts a hand on her shoulder. "I'm sorry," she says. "No, it's okay," Annetta says. She looks at her watch, then wipes her face. "Shit, I really don't have time to cry. I have to go." Milo and Fiona come in. Their hands are muddy.
"Are you here for the order of service?" Milo asks Noor.
"Why not?" she says. They stand either side of her. Each of them puts a muddy, possibly bird-bloody hand into her own, and they lead her out into the garden. By the time Annetta gets back, it's 5 o'clock. The sun has gone down, and Noor turns on the lights in the house. Under one lamp is a picture of William, Annetta, Milo, and Fiona in a place that looks like Spain. There's a sea behind them, dramatically blue. William's wearing a straw hat. His face is in shadow, his nose lit up. His green eyes are hidden in the deepest darkness, under the hat. Later that night, with Milo and Fiona asleep in bed and Annetta asleep on the sofa under a blanket, Noor gets up and puts on her coat and shoes, quietly. She writes a note and puts it on the hall table. Then she leaves the house, gets in her car, and drives towards London. It's past midnight when Noor arrives at Louise's house. The house itself is set back from the road behind a plain wall, with a door and intercom in the wall. She can just see the edges of the illuminated glass cube behind some trees. Louise is awake, as Noor knew she would be. She presses the intercom, and Louise answers.
"It's me," Noor says.
"Please let me in." Noor hasn't been in this house for years. It's not that different to what she remembers. The Japanese art, which she had ample time to commit to memory, still hangs on the walls, lit simply and elegantly. There are a few lamps on, but the rest of the house is in darkness. Acres of dark floor, acres of dark glass. No lights on in the garden, and no champagne tonight. "What the fuck are you doing here?" Louise asks. She says it without force. In fact, she seems more curious than anything. She's wearing a pair of jeans and a cable-knit jumper. Neither of them have holes or stains, though why Noor was expecting Louise to look anything other than immaculate, she couldn't say. It's not likely that Louise would have stopped washing or sacked her housekeeper, come to that.
Well, Noor says.
Hold on, Louise says. If you actually want to talk, you can't record me.
I didn't plan to, Noor says.
She puts her phone on the table and takes her jacket off.
Do you need me to take anything else off? I'm not wearing a wire.
The fact you think people still wear wires shows that you have definitely not been sent by any official law enforcement body, Louise says. Want a whiskey?
Why not? Noor says.
They sit on Louise's long sofa in a lone circle of light. Noor sips the whiskey. She doesn't know why she accepted it. It tastes disgusting. There isn't a coffee table anywhere in sight. Perhaps the Japanese frown on coffee tables. So she puts it on the floor beside her. Louise observes her dispassionately.
I didn't expect you to come here, she says.
She tips her head.
You've surprised me.
Noor feels a familiar thrill go through her. Approval from Louise. But she slaps it down.
I'm not here for myself, she says. I'm here because I've met William Hall's wife, Annetta.
I know who William's wife is, Louise says.
Well, she doesn't know what happened to him. She's trying to move on, but she's devastated. She needs to know what his reasons were for...
There's a short silence. It fills up with tarmac, blood, low sun, the weight on her wet legs. Noor picks up the whiskey and drinks it, too fast. She coughs. She puts the glass down again.
So... You came to ask me, says Louise.
Yes. I don't know how much of what you've said to me over the years is true, if you really did see me as a friend. But I think we were friends. And I don't think you're a cruel person. I'm sure you hate me now, but this isn't about me. Annetta hasn't done anything to you.
Louise looks at her for a few moments. It's impossible to tell whether she agrees or disagrees with any of this.
I think this is a reason why you're here, Louise says eventually. But it's not the only reason why you're here, is it? Listen, Noor, if you tell me the truth, maybe I'll be honest too.
Okay, Noor says.
I still want to know what the fuck happened. I want to know what Raza was and what you were doing, calling those people, taking money. I want to know if someone paid you to wipe Eleanor's memory, forced her to do it. I want to know if William's death was my fault. I want to know if I did the right thing, calling Clifford to report you. I want to know if you're secretly a good person that seems bad now, or a bad person that seemed good then. I want to know if Nepenthe is a good thing or a bad thing, if there is such a thing as Nepenthe, if it's even possible. I want to know if I'm a good person or a bad one. I want to know what the point of it is, what the point of me is.
Not quick questions then, Louise says.
Noor wipes her eyes, which have inconveniently started to leak.
You know I can't help you with all of that, Louise says. I can tell you the doings, the goings on. I can't tell you the abstract stuff. Come on, how many times have I said this to you? It's not linear. There are no stories. There are no rules. There are no answers.
Noor realizes she's begun to lean forward. She's reminded of the conversations she and Louise used to have in the early days, Louise sitting opposite her, usually across a desk, her expensive perfume crossing the space between them to reach Noor every now and again, like a touch, a brush on the nose.
There's none of that perfume tonight. No detectable scent of any kind. Noor wonders what she herself smells of. Whiskey, probably. Fright.
Just tell me the goings-on, then, she says coolly, shifting back.
Fine. I help people who can't get deletions, Louise says. There have been a lot of them, mostly self-known, a few self-confidentials, the ones you looked up yourself. The problem with the self-confidentials is that when they got the letter offering them their memory back, they didn't know that I'd helped them. They thought everything was above board.
Criminals? Noor asks.
People on both sides of the law, actually. I decide the merits of each case individually. I've never lied to you about my beliefs, Noor. I told you, the best anyone can do is reduce harm. That's what I do.
By breaking the law.
Okay. Louise looks impatient. Let's pretend for a minute that civil law is analogous to moral law. If we lived in a simple world, morality might have relevance, but it's not simple. And yet people persist in acting like it is simple, and one rule can be applied to every situation. Nepenthe has a set of rules, the law has a set of rules, but those rules can't cover everyone. There are people like William, who have a PTSD memory that they aren't allowed to delete. Then there are people who might be at risk from others, from criminals.
Like Eleanor.
People who needed to be kept quiet used to be kept quiet in pretty heavy-handed ways, Noor. I offer a more humane solution. I can't stop crime, obviously, but I can reduce the body count.
So she knew something about her boss being murdered, and they forced her to forget it?
Yes. And if they hadn't, she wouldn't have been around for you to fall in love with. Against the rules, I might remind you.
Brief pause for Noor to writhe for a second in the full knowledge of what a fucking idiot she's been. The things she said to Eleanor. Her stupid, cruel theory about Eleanor and her boss. She's lit up with hatred for herself. But Louise is here, hating her too. And Noor needs someone on her own team. She refocuses.
So all these different people get in touch with you? She asks. How? How do you find out that a police officer needs a deletion? How do the criminals find you? Is there a directory for this sort of thing? How do you even know all these people?
Influential people and corrupt people? Louise asks. I was at Oxford, Noor. Alistair went to Eton.
Noor is irritated to see that Louise looks amused.
It's not funny, she says.
Louise lifts her hands. You did set me up for that one.
Right. I'd ask how you justify what you do, but I expect I'd just get some shades of grey bullshit.
Don't get sulky, Noor, Louise says sharply. You came to my house. It's only polite to listen to some of my bullshit, and of course it's shades of grey. Like I said, the world isn't simple. Only ideas are simple, and pure, and good, until it comes to the execution. Take Nepenthe. It's a beautiful idea. It's why I signed up, believe it or not. Like you, I thought that we were improving the lot of humanity by removing some of its pain. But then when we actually set up Nepenthe in the real world and put real people in charge of it, it wasn't so pure and good anymore. I'm not saying that it was a bad thing, necessarily. It just went very grey. I mean, at the top, you've got a board that has known about resurgent memories, traces, for years, and sat on it,
until that marine snail's research came out and forced them to admit memories could be restored. A little lower down, you've got ridiculous, reckless research programs, like RASA. Off to one side, you get private doctors paid off to say their clients' drugs tests came back negative, or that they aren't mentally unstable. Actually, here's a story for you, Noor. I had a client who did that, paid a doctor to say she was clean so she could get a memory deleted. After she removed the memory, her coke problem went away. What's the moral there? And finally, right at the bottom, you get clients trying to cheat the system, like that Kurtz woman, or psychologists sleeping with clients. Okay, I get it. And fuck knows what sales are doing, Louise says. I wish you'd stop making jokes, Noor says. So what made you stop bothering with pure and good? She picks her whiskey up again. It goes down a bit better, third time round. It was RASA, actually, Louise says. I fought it. Nobody listened. I nearly quit. Then I wondered what else I'd do. Find another job, but in a pure, good medical tech firm run by pure, good people? So yes, I changed my expectations. I did still believe in Nepenthe. I still thought that it would reduce harm. I just decided that I'd stop following rules because they were being decided by arrogant pricks who didn't give a shit about human lives, and that I'd administer Nepenthe my way. Reducing harm, Noor says. Actually, yes. Giving people in desperate situations another option. And making a huge profit. Don't forget I was taking a huge personal risk. Plus, I have a daughter. I want her to have money. The way the world is going, she'll need a state-of-the-art bunker. Art, Noor says. She looks around the room. Where does that fit with least harm? If you were in it for the greater good, you would have donated the money to Amnesty instead of buying Japanese paintings. Woodblock prints, Louise says. And I'm not going to justify my decisions to you. I don't expect you to believe that it's possible to do a good thing and make money. I expect you think I'm childish and reductive, says Noor bitterly. I think you don't know the world yet, Louise says, because you're not part of it. Live in it for a little while, then come back to me. This lands, as Louise knew it would. Thanks for the advice, Noor says. She hears herself again, sounding more riled than she'd hoped to let on. But why even bother pretending? Louise has always been able to read her. And Louise, though she's refrained from doing so up until now, knows how to injure her too. What's RASA? She asks. Sorry, Noor, Louise says. I'm going to need RASA. That's my leverage. I have copies of all the files. It's the main reason Nepenthe haven't publicly executed me. You should find some leverage of your own, you know. They're looking for a scapegoat. Noor finishes the whiskey. Louise doesn't offer her another. She just looks at her. Her eyes are a light grey blue. They can look stony in some light, hard and unreflective. I'll tell you about William, Louise says. He needed a deletion, but he was a police officer at that time, and he wasn't allowed to have the procedure. How much did that cost him? A fraction of the amount I charge other people, actually. So you means-tested criminals, Noor says. Louise shrugs. And why couldn't you find him later? He needed to be self-confidential. Then he moved house and left the police. The contact who put me in touch with him unfortunately died. I had no way of getting hold of him. That's why I came in, to ask you. I thought maybe you could hack into something, I don't know. It was a last resort.
You thought I'd help you?
Noor asks. Louise shrugs again. It's an eloquent shrug. And Noor feels the approach of,
no,
no, but here it is. Shame.
Get down, Noor snaps at it, like it's a dog. Lie down, stay.
She's not going to let Louise make her feel ashamed for following the rules, for obeying the law. It's Louise that has abused their friendship, not Noor.
So William was corrupt, she says.
Not to my mind. He accidentally killed a boy, years ago, trying to save him from an oncoming car. But he developed PTSD, and he was clearly suicidal when he came to see me. So I deleted the memory. And that's why I was trying to stop his restoration. But yes, what he did was illegal, so I suppose you'd see him as corrupt.
Noor puts her head in her hands. The shame is here now.
No, she says.
No, you weren't doing a selfless thing. You were protecting yourself, because William could have exposed you, and everything you were up to would come out, and...
She realizes, as she's saying it, that she's way off. Louise doesn't speak unkindly or triumphantly. She just sighs and says, William wouldn't have done that. He'd have ruined his own life if he said anything. That's the only reason I'm telling you this. Annetta won't go public either. She'll be given a lot of money not to, which she can pass on to her children. The other option is that her kids grow up with no money and a criminal for a dad.
So he did die because of me, Noor thinks.
Is this true?
Yes, it is.
She doesn't know if Louise, a presence Noor is dimly aware of, sitting in silence, watching her, told Noor this as an act of kindness or cruelty. It hardly matters. Noor is the reason that William died. She stands up.
I'm going to go, she says.
Okay, Louise says. She follows Noor to the door. In the low light, Noor's feet catch on rugs, door thresholds. Louise moves silently, unerringly. Something about this makes Noor angry. By the time they get to the front door, she's full of rage at both of them. Louise opens the front door without saying anything. The cold air fills the hall almost immediately, lifting their hair.
I'm going to have to live with what you just told me,
Noor says to Louise.
You know how difficult that's going to be. But at least I didn't mean any harm. Your do least harm is shitty. It means do some harm. You mean to do it. You think you're the one in charge of judging how much harm and for whom, but your judgment is off. That's how you turned into a mother who puts her perfectly normal kid on antidepressants and pushes her into getting a deletion. Where's May now? How does she feel about do least harm?
Louise's face tightens. Her mouth changes, twitches. Other than this, she stands still, holding the door. Noor realizes she's seeing something she hasn't ever seen before, never in her life. Louise, devastated. She almost says, I'm sorry. She doesn't say it. She says,
I am going to live in the world, and I'm not going to end up like you.
Noor doesn't sleep that night. She falls asleep by accident the next morning, holding her phone. She wakes up when her phone falls onto the floor with a bang, opening her eyes to the cold spring day, the sky blindingly bright. It's evening before she feels able to go to Annetta's. She texts and asks if she can come over once the children are in bed. I've got to talk to you about Louise, she adds, because she suspects that by the time the hour of the visit approaches, she might have lost courage and try to get out of it. She's right about that. As she stands on the doorstep, waiting for Annetta to answer, she realizes she's shaking. The sun is just going down behind her. Birds are still singing in the darkening periwinkle sky. Annetta appears, a pixelated shape flickering and expanding in the textured glass panes. And Noor inhales, deeply, like it's the last chance she'll get. Tell me a story. This is what Noor thinks as she sits opposite Annetta, having refused tea because she's not sure if and when she's going to be asked to leave. A story without a good, solid villain and no heroes at all. No answer, no justice, no happy ending. But when the story ends, Annetta tells Noor it's not her fault. She waves away, too, the idea of blaming Louise. She says she doesn't care about Louise. It's almost comically shocking to Noor, actually, the realization that there are people who have lived their entire lives without admiring Louise, being advised by Louise, wondering what Louise would think about this or that, hoping Louise would approve of them. It's William, Annetta is furious with. He should have got therapy, Noor, she says. Tears haven't made her less articulate. She talks faster, even, with a lucid fluidity. That's what people did before Nepenthe was invented. It wasn't binary. It wasn't death or deletion. I can see him now, making his decision between honor and disgrace, like some medieval idiot. Even after he got that wipe, so what? Even if he'd gone to prison and I'd have had to support myself and the kids, we could have got through it. He'd never have allowed that, obviously, but he was wrong. And I can't even argue with him. Not that he'd have listened to me anyway. I could have helped him, but he'd never have talked to me. I know he loved me, Noor, but he never really opened up. I'm being honest. I miss him. I loved him more than anything. But it was hard to love him. Noor shakes her head. Tears have shut her up. Faintly, she's aware of the sting of hard to love. A nerve somewhere, probably in the heart, being hit. And I know why he did it the way he did it, Annetta says. If it's an accident, we get life insurance. If it's a suicide, we get nothing. The memory of William's blood, so much of it by the end, that afterwards Noor's clothes were heavy and hard. It was hard to move her legs. Noor stops the memory, a technique from the days of blotting out Eleanor. She simply visualizes herself pressing a button on an old video recorder. The screen goes black. It still might not have been suicide, Noor says. I wasn't close enough to see it properly.
Nobody was, Annetta says. I'm sure he was very thorough in that respect. Checking out the CCTV on the street, the angle of the sun. They said the sun must have been in his eyes. Oh, I know exactly what he did. So conscientious. Is it bad, Noor, that I want William back just so I can shout at him, slap him even, tell him what a bloody fool he's been?
Then she cries, so much that she can't talk through it anymore. Noor watches her cry. She thinks she should put a hand on Annetta's shoulder, so she does. The gesture feels strange to her. An imposition. But Annetta puts her own hand over Noor's and clenches it there so that Noor is effectively kept with her,
taking part in this grief that travels through Annetta's hand and into Noor's own body until it's over, and Annetta says,
I was always trying to get something from him that he wouldn't ever give to me. It was exhausting. I'd do anything to have him back. But part of me would dread it too. I'm sorry. I don't mean that. Or maybe I do. I don't know.
I understand, says Noor.
Noor wonders if things like that can change a person, holding on to someone as they experience such extremes, grief, death, love. If Noor hadn't held William, she wouldn't have gone to Annetta's house. If Noor hadn't held Annetta's hand, she wouldn't be here the next morning, watching Milo and Fiona eat the porridge that she made them for breakfast. Admittedly, they've taken so long to pick out all the pieces of raisin, Fiona, and banana, Milo, that the porridge is basically cold, but still. Noor Ali, sitting at a kitchen table with a family, eating breakfast. Who'd have thought it? Hard to love, Noor thinks. She has been hard to love. She has been hardened against love. She has found love hard. Oscar Levy held her hand when she was incapable of anything. The questions are the point, he said. Noor thinks of what Louise said. There are no stories. There are no rules. There are no answers. Funny that this is what comforts her. Things said by a possibly brain-damaged former patient and a woman who probably hates her. Something she isn't even sure Louise really believed, or if she just said it because it suited her purposes at that time. But it comforts Noor, regardless. She thinks about Oscar Levy a lot. She wonders whether to call him. Clifford and the Nepenthe management deserve to have their activities made public, without question. But that's as far as the absolutes go. Noor thinks about the damaged people crying out about Raza, online, and among the protesters. That damage has been done. It can't be undone, but could it be made worse? And in which case, maybe there's an argument for not bringing Raza to light, but using the knowledge to save herself. Is saving herself so bad? She's not a bad person. Maybe she deserves to be saved. But what about Oscar? Whether for justice or self-interest, if Noor finds out more about Raza, she'd be using him. Maybe putting him at risk of getting sued. Or just hurting him. He said he wanted to be her friend. She can't let him be hurt. But then, she wonders, is there a way to find out what happened to him without doing him any harm? Harm, she thinks. Every day she thinks, should I call him? Every day she thinks, no. But the next day, she thinks again, could I? Noor leaves Annetta's house in the late morning. It's a slightly milder day today, a clear bluish sky. The sounds of her feet on the stone path, her scrapings through her bag, her little cough, rise up through the air, past the closed windows of the houses, the branches of the ash tree in Annetta's front garden. She gets into her car to make her call. She sits there, with the fastened seatbelt warning binging, listening to the phone ring. It goes to voicemail. Hi, Eleanor, Noor says. It's me, Noor. I know I behaved horribly to you. I was stupid and wrong, and now I've lost my job, and I might be going to prison. But
Is there any chance that when I get out, I could take you for a drink?
Of course, she doesn't know if it's even Eleanor's number anymore. And even if it is, she doesn't know if Eleanor remembers her. And even if Eleanor does remember her, Noor doesn't know if Eleanor has got over her a long time ago, or if she's with someone else now and happy. But maybe none of that matters, she thinks. Asking the question. That's what matters.